STR podcasts are brought to you through the generous support of people just like you. You can support these podcasts by making a gift online at str.org or by phone at 1-800-2-REASON.
Hello there, I'm Melinda the Enforcer, and I'm here with Greg Kokel, and this is the Hashtag STRS podcast, the short podcast, the podcast where we put Greg on a timer, and I pose him your questions that you send us on Twitter using Hashtag STRAsk. Why do you look amused?
Why did you say Kokel like that? Like Greg Kokel? Like
just for some variation.
You think you should vary is when you open.
It was
saying,
more
oh,
dramatic,
there.
Greg Kokel.
Oh, like we should have drum roll or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you are right. It is I. Next.
Yeah. Just trying to think. So.
You're trying to think of a comeback. Don't even.
No, I wasn't thinking of a comeback. I was just thinking
don't waste
the next
your time.
Thing to say.
Just.
Know I know. I can't reply to foolishness intelligently. We post two episodes of STRAsk every week, Mondays and Thursdays. Longer podcast, we post Wednesdays and Fridays, and Greg is here on Tuesdays taking questions and calls for that longer podcast between 4 and 6 p.m. Pacific time. You ready to get going on this?
Yes.
Okay, first question comes from BenDavid89. Are there any good resources that compare the biblical creation account with other creation mythologies, like from the Egyptians or Canaanites?
Well, the famous one is the Gilgamesh epic, and well, there are resources for that. You can Google up the Gilgamesh epic, and I'm sure you're going to get Christians who have compared ours to theirs. So now the real issue, some people will say, since Gilgamesh looks a lot like aspects of the Genesis account, that there's a literary relationship, okay? That means one borrowed from the other, presumably Moses borrowed from Gilgamesh, you know. And my view is I don't care if there's a literary relationship. You know, you look in the book of Proverbs, and there's a lot of Proverbs there that were seized from other wisdom literature of the time, like the wisdom of the Menomopi that's available. And you see a lot of sections that seem to repeat the same kind of thing. I tell my girls a stitch in time saves nine, you know. If I was putting together Proverbs, I would put together biblical ones and other ones, you know, that seem to be valuable, help you to know how life works. So I don't see any liability between the or conflict between the idea that there is a literary relationship between a biblical text and a non-biblical text, such that the biblical writer borrowed from the non-biblical text and the text still being truly inspired. It becomes inspired in the borrowing. That is, these are the words God wanted to communicate, even if they were said by someone else first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But I think there's, in a sense, a silver lining to these things, that if there was a creation, the way something similar to what we see in the book of Genesis, that we shouldn't be surprised if other cultures have some recollection
right.
in their cultural accounts of creation of what took place. So we should see some parallels, just
it
like with the flood.
It would be surprising if we didn't.
Yes.
Because they all could trace their ancestry back to Adam and Eve.
Right.
Therefore, it would have been recounted to
right,
them.
Especially the flood, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to see flood accounts that show up in lots of different cultures, and there are going to be variations of them because those things change over time. We should expect that.
And Noah's family would have been, they then repopulated, and so they would have told
right.
the story of what happened.
That's right. So there would be that memory in the culture of it. So I don't see any difficulty with these things. And if you want to find the parallels, I think it's best just to Google other creation accounts and see what you come up with. I've discovered recently, and this is not going to be news to most people, but maybe to some, if you have a question about anything, just type the question into Google with a question mark, and every single time I've asked the question, even when it was a really long sentence, every single time I've asked the question, I've gotten a precise response. responses to my specific question, and there were lots of them.
You just discovered that?
Well, I've just been using it a lot lately, oh, okay. And it's something I stumbled upon by accident. I mean, I don't know how long I've known, maybe a couple of years, but I'm just passing it on being helpful. Cause
that's why it's become a phrase in the culture. Just Google it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I know you can Google, like, you know, a phrase or a thing, right. Like dancing shoes, and then you can get all kinds of stuff about dancing shoes. But to
Did
have
you Google
the Google
dancing shoes?
To be able to – it's different – when it's given
no,
you a topic,
right.
Than when it's given a grammatical
right.
sentence.
Though I will say, I mean, the one thing, anytime you Google anything, whether it's a phrase or a question, you still have to have some discernment to sift through some of the answers. I mean, certain things can be very straightforward. Mm-hmm. You know, like last night I Googled, I had heard about this new postal service where they'll actually email you every day with a list of the first class letters that were delivered to you, because there's so much trouble with mail being stolen now.
Uh-huh.
So I Googled that question. Well, obviously there's not going to be a lot of crazy answers to that. There's just an answer. Mm-hmm. But you ask other questions and you're going to get all kinds of answers and you're going to have to use some discernment to sort through them.
Well, you could say, how much money did the first Star Wars movie make?
Well, sure.
That's a question. I mean, it's a simple one. It just come to mind, but then bang, it's going to tell you, you know, $147 billion, blah, 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 whatever it happens mm-hmm. to be. You know.
But you Google a question for any like Bible question, you're going to get all kinds of critical answers
right.
too.
So all I'm saying is I think it's technologically kind of amazing that it can navigate grammar, and also that I found out, you know, a lot of times I just ask the question. Mm-hmm. You don't need Siri; just use Google, and you can get a whole bunch of information very quickly.
Siri to ask the question on Google.
Okay.
Next question, or Alexa, too. She's pretty helpful. Next question comes from Roller Berry. What do you make of Matthew 27:51-53? Has there ever been a dispute about it not being part of the original manuscripts?
Well, this is a passage during the crucifixion of Christ in which the veil of the temple is torn in two from top to bottom. The tombs are opened. Bodies of the saints had fallen asleep, were raised, and they walked around, and a centurion there keeping guard over Jesus, when he saw the earthquake and the things that were happening, he became frightened and said, truly, this was the Son of God.
These now, aren't disputed. This isn't disputed, is it?
Say again?
This is not missing from the early manuscripts.
Well, right? I don't see any evidence in the marginal renderings right. here that this is a textual variation. There is some debate, famously, in the last 5 years about what this means. And Michael Lacona got himself in a whole lot of trouble speculating about this, thinking it was Midrash or something like that. And it wasn't meant to be understood literally, but that this reflected. And I'm not sure that he was actually weighing in with this as his opinion, but he suggested the idea that this was a certain genre of ancient Near Eastern literature that shows up kind of here in this reference. But he got himself...
it was controversial. It was very controversial.
It was very controversial. We'll leave it at that. And I think
thinking he was not saying that the Bible, that this passage was to be taken literally. Of course, any question about any passage of the Bible taken literally first means you have to determine what kind of literature it is, what genre it is, so you know how to take it literally.
Right. So anyway, this raised questions about his commitment to inerrancy. Which I don't have any questions about personally. I know Mike, have known him for a long time, and he I think he got a little bit of a bad rap on this. But in any event, I mean, part of his job, his historian, is to kind of probe around here, and he said other things that have kind of raised some eyebrows. So I'm not just taking this issue on. If the question is about the textual integrity of this section, there's no, as far as I can say, no reason to believe that this is a variant that's in question. As far as its meaning, that's another story.
You're not going to comment on that?
Well, I don't have a horse in this race. I think Bill Craig agreed with him, as I recall, and nobody questioned Bill Craig's commitment to inerrancy. So it was just one of those kind of awkward things that lasted longer than it should have, I think. But it looks like now it's largely put to rest until people listen to our podcast.
And we start it up again. I think it'd be, I've always kind of wanted this to have been literally true because I think it's pretty cool. What was that? I've always wanted this passage to be literally accurate.
Yeah,
but this actually happened in history of what happened, because that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah. The question here, by the way, is not about the veil of the temple. The question is, and there's symbolic significance to that, or the earthquake, it's the tombs were open. It has to do with the nature of the resurrection of these people.
Getting up and walking around.
Yeah, that's the question.
Right.
What else you got?
Next question.
John 11?
Actually, no, that's for the next episode.
Oh.
Next question comes from Unique Song of Joy. Young Earth creationists argue that God is the light until the sun is created. If true, wouldn't we still see that light, or would he hide it then once the sun was created?
Well, to me, that's an example. There is nothing in the text that suggests that. Okay, God says, let there be God. Let there be light. So if the light is God, he's just saying, let there be me. Let me glow. I don't know.
Well,
like
or
Shekinah
maybe
glory,
let them see my light, or let my light be evident.
Yeah.
He was already glowing, but let my light be evident.
That seems to me to be an explanation that's meant to save the paradigm, but it doesn't have much strength to it. Oh, that light is God. So you don't have light until the fourth day. All right, you don't have a sun until the fourth day, so the question is, where did the light come from? Now, by the way, there are other explanations. Hugh Ross says the sun was always there, but it was luminous, but you couldn't see it because of the opacity of the atmosphere, and he's got a very compelling explanation for that. Regardless, even if we just take it at face value, where's the sun? If the sun's not there until the fourth day, then where's the light? Oh, God was the light. Well, it doesn't say God was the light. That, to me, is just kind of coming up with an explanation that has no basis in the text, but it's meant to save the view. By the way, okay, if there is no sun, though, how do you get a morning and an evening? You're going to say God was the morning and God was the evening?
You just set your clock.
Just set your clock. So anyway, I think that's another problem. The morning and evening, I think you can have a day's worth of time with no sun to mark it if you just count the sun as a big celestial clock, okay? But you can't have a morning without a sun, and you can't have an evening without a sun, at least not to ancient Near Easterners.
By definition,
morning
it's
is the sunrise.
The presence of the sun and the disappearance.
And exactly. And the evening is the sunset. And so this, I think, represents a serious problem. What ought to suggest to readers is that something else is going on here than a straightforward description of six solar days. Or six calendar days, which are marked by the sun for three of them, or two of them.
So
four, five, six.
Right. And so Genesis 1 is the description of the creation of the physical world, the physical universe. God isn't physical, so does it even make sense in any way to say that God would shine light that is physical?
Well, there's a Shekinah glory, you know, that's a very unique kind of thing.
That's true.
The Shekinah glory there in the... But
Moses witnessed it, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and then you see it associated with the ark. But in this case, the Shekinah glory would be lighting up the entire world, and I just have no reason to think that's the case. It's almost like when it's ad hoc. Okay, this is a word that it means for this, but it's literally for this. But its application is you come up with an explanation that just fixes your problem. You know, it isn't like this really fits into a broad number of cases. It just fixes your problem and you save your paradigm. And that seems what's going on with that explanation.
Are you aware of any other explanations for where the light comes from young earth Christians have that might make more sense?
No, I'm not. I'm not aware of it. That may be there.
Okay.
I think Hugh Ross's explanation is excellent, though. The sun is there. It's just you can't see it. And there are other things that are going on. Pardon me?
He's not a young earth Christian.
No, he's not. That's a good point. He's not.
Right. All right. Well, that's it. Thanks, Greg, for your insight in short, snappy answers. We appreciate it. #STRAsk, go to Twitter and use that when you type out your question for us, and we will retrieve it, pose it to Greg, and give him 4 minutes or less to answer it. Two episodes every week, Mondays and Thursdays. The other podcast, Wednesdays and Fridays. Thanks for listening to us. I'm Melinda the Enforcer with Greg Kolkel for Stand to Reason.
You've been listening to Stand to Reason. Our podcasts are made possible by friends of this ministry through their generous support. You can support STR by making a gift online at str.org.